Hi, this is Randy Eccles on NPR Illinois with Community Voices. And today we're joined by Tiffany Saunders. And I am really looking forward to talking to her. She's been busy around campus. But I guess to start off, just tell us about yourself, Tiffany.
Yeah, so I am originally from Maryland, though I like to say I have Midwest roots because I was born in Omaha, Nebraska. But then we moved to Maryland. That's where I spent most of my sort of formative years. I am a graduate of Bowie State University, which is Maryland's oldest historically Black college and university. And I only bring that up because it shaped me in really, really profound ways and shaped who I am today and the things that are important to me. In ways that I didn't realize when my mom forced me to go there, which is another story. and then I did my grad work at Indiana University in Bloomington, which was also a pretty formative and shaping experience as well. I really think it shapes a lot of my teaching in profound ways. And then came to UIS. This was my first job out of my grad work. And I didn't think I was going to stay longer than 5 years, and I am starting my 10th year, so I was obviously very wrong.
to our benefit, which is great. You know, I don't think everybody knows about HBCUs, and you said it was very formative for you. Could you tell us a little bit more about how that worked?
Yeah, so HBCUs have played a really important part in the African-American community. So when Blacks were precluded from attending predominantly white institutions, historically HBCUs, historically Black colleges were developed. Most of them were, especially in the South, agricultural types of colleges, and then the North, teaching colleges. So my university was initially a teaching college. It was meant to produce teachers who would then obviously educate the next generation of newly freed slaves. And so what I really think that this was formative for me because I grew up in Maryland, but I grew up in Montgomery County. So it was a really integrated county, which is different from counties like PG, Prince George's County, which is predominantly Black. So I think one of the things that really happened for me when I went to an HBCU was it was the first time that I was surrounded almost exclusively by Black students and Black professors and professionals. And so just being able to see the range of students and the range of opportunities with regard to professionals, and just also having, you know, aspects of who I am as a person develop there was really, really important. Not to mention, there's nothing like a HBCU band. And I was a dancer in the band. And so I really feel like that experience shaped me as well. There's just a real sense of community that comes from being in part of in something like a band that was sort of separate from being at the HBCU itself. But really how that shaped me in other ways with regards to what I'm doing today is I was also in the honors program. And so it was one of the first times that I saw sort of segregation within, student groups at something even like a HBCU. So like the honor students live in the best dorm, but our dorm was across the street from something called Towers, which was basically a brick high rise. So you get this idea of like, quote unquote, poverty and affluence on something like a HBCU with the dorms being right across the street from each other. And so that sort of inequality, we also got all access to everything in a way that other students didn't. And it really changed how students treated us as well. And so I think seeing that really shaped me in profound ways. I went to college also thinking I wasn't going to stay at Bowie long because I really wanted to be a paleontologist. I had this love of dinosaurs growing up. So that was my career goal, was to just go there for a year or two and then switch to a place where I could actually study paleontology. But really, it was that first year noticing that difference between the honor students and the non-honor students, bringing that up in my sociology class and the sociology professor are saying, you should be a sociologist, and the rest is kind of history. So
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time to go through that. You said you went to Indiana and then you got here to Springfield. Why'd you get here to Springfield?
Apply for a job.
And
it's just the job. I knew when I was in grad school that I really enjoyed the teaching aspect of it. I didn't think that that was the case going in. I also like the idea of being in the state capitol because I've always wanted to do some policy work and sort of use sociology to shape policy. And so when this job came up at a teaching focused university in a state capitol, it was sort of like the perfect marriage of my interest.
So how are you coping with coronavirus?
So as an introvert by nature, especially early on, I feel like I coped really well. So this idea that I wasn't expected to go anywhere was actually quite nice. But I have definitely felt the need to do things like go out for a walk more. Like I did a lot of that in like late spring and early summer. When it got really hot, we stopped some of that, but I'm back to taking walks. So, and craving just time with friends, not necessarily in person, but I've been doing a lot of Zoom meetings with my friends. We've had some Zoom birthday parties with family. So some of the things that I'm missing are just some of the travel that I used to do in the summer and that we didn't do at all this summer. I have also used this time to reflect a lot. I mean, I'm a human, but I'm also a scholar. So I'm like thinking about how, you know, some of the things that we're trying could lead to some really great educational reform if we actually think about what we're doing right now and try to document what we're doing as well. Because there's certainly aspects that I don't want to do forever. Like I don't want to Zoom teach forever. So while I'm an introvert and teaching actually does take a lot out of me, I still want to be in person with the students. Like I'm missing some of the verbal cues, right? They're not turning on camera. So there's just some of those interactions that I'm missing. But I do think there are some good things that have come out of this as well. Like we're paying more attention to issues of equity and inclusion in higher ed, right? And also through K through 12. I mean, I have a high school sophomore, so I've watched some of this happen for him as well. But it's, you know, when students don't have access to internet, how do we sort of approach that and deal with that? Is the university or education just limited to the buildings in which it occurs? So I've been really enjoying thinking about this from sort of a philosophical level as well. But again, I'm a professor, I'm a scholar. This is what we were trained to do. So I understand other people might be like, no, what is she talking about? I want to be out, this is dumb, or I'm over it. And I get all of that too. So I'm also interested in sort of community and people response to what's happening as well, so.
Have you noticed anything in particular? Like you mentioned, you don't want to keep teaching Zoom lessons, but have you noticed something that seems to have been a really interesting way to teach because of this?
Yeah, so I've definitely tried a lot more things in my classes than I was before. I mean, I think we get really comfortable with like, let's just break students into groups and like do things that way. But it becomes much harder in an environment by Zoom, in like Zoom, and due to issues of equity, you know, I'm not requiring students to come to the session. So you never know how many people are gonna actually show up, which is often problematic, but it's led to some really interesting things. So like I've been using the chat feature quite a bit to sort of engage in some meaningful conversation. I've also done things like I've learned how to create like Google Forms to get things from students. I've done like interactive things like Kahoot, which is usually done in like K through 12, but I've done it successfully in higher ed in a few of my classes. And I think we could be using more of these tools in our classes because students already come in with that knowledge because they did learn it in K through 12. And so I learned how to use Flipgrid. So I really spent the summer learning how to use some of these tools that were out there that, again, many of our students were already exposed to in K through 12. And then, you know, we get to college and we think, oh, that's childish. Oh, it's whatever. But I think there's a lot of room for innovation, even in higher ed, using some of those tools that have been primarily marketed for K through 12. I learned how to create a virtual escape room. So one of the things that I wanted to do in some of my classes was to use escape rooms for reviews for like major things like tests or major papers, but you can't do that under COVID. So like, even if we were in the room together, it'd be difficult because we can't share the escape room material. So I learned how to make a virtual escape room essentially using Google products. So I feel like I've learned a lot. And so in learning how to use these skills, I've been able to pass that down to my students. So
that sounds like an awesome class to have with you. So that's great. Hopefully this will be over sometime soon. What do you think we can do to help the community recover?
I think one of the things that we can do is to continue some of the things that we've already been doing. So I'm fortunate to be a part of a Facebook group called Springfield Families Helping Families. And this group popped up right at the beginning of the pandemic crisis. So when everything kind of shut down in March, it popped up as sort of a way for community members who were in need of things to sort of get help or to get access to resources. I think in order to recover when this is over, we're going to need some of those same things to stay around. We've always needed them, but we've always only used them or they've only popped up in times of crisis. And I think, you know, a global pandemic points out that everyone's in crisis, but in day-to-day non-pandemic life, someone is always in crisis. And so I think it's important to remember that. And so I think, you know, there's also a real danger in thinking that just because maybe the pandemic is over or better, or we have a vaccine, that everything is immediately going to just go back to normal, because it won't. Like, the world is different in very profound ways. And so I think there's a real danger in thinking that that things will go back to the way that it was before. But I also don't think we should be wishing for things to go back to the way that it was before. Because in addition to the pandemic, we've seen a lot of social unrest. And so I think we need to keep all of these things in mind, even after it's over. Like, again, the things that the social unrest was bringing to our attention were not new. It was just elevated because we were all at home, and you know what I mean? And so we're able to pay attention a bit more because our own lives have been slowed down. So I would love to see some of this compassion for our fellow citizens continue after the pandemic. I would love for us to see continual sort of efforts towards equality for all groups of people, so that all groups of people have similar experiences in this nation. Obviously, there's great potential, but I think it's also really important to remember that one's own experiences might not match what other people's experiences are, whether we're talking about social unrest and issues of race, or we're talking about things like getting access to food, right? So the social scientist in me, the sociologist in me says, let's continue that sort of care and compassion for our fellow citizens, even after the pandemic is quote unquote over.
How do we maintain that momentum?
It's hard. I think we've seen some really great leadership. I've often said, you know, some of us who are a little bit older, and I mean, I'm not that old, but I've always said some of us who are a little bit older have to get out of the way for some of the people who have the fresh ideas and the energy to keep that momentum going. And I think we tend to think of ourselves as older and wiser, and therefore should be sort of the voice or pushing forward an agenda. But I also like to think about this in terms of parenting, right? So like, taking advice from your parents is maybe not the best idea because their advice was for a particular world and that world no longer exists. And so I think it's important for those of us who are older as well to understand that some of our ideas don't necessarily fit the world as it exists today. So I'm of the opinion of like, let's give younger people, young adults, you know, even, you know, later age children a voice and a space to share their ideas. They're our future anyway. So if we can start giving them that voice and that space and that confidence, they're really the ones that are going to keep this momentum going. We just have to get out of the way and support them as best as we can.
So is the Hip Hop Express one of those spaces you're trying to create to give them more voice?
That's exactly it. So it's giving them voice, but also giving skills. It's addressing a community need, right? So we tend to, hip hop has always been the voice of people who didn't have a voice in sort of mainstream society. Hip hop has always been used to talk about what's going on, for instance, in impoverished neighborhoods, to give a real sort of local perspective on what's going on. What the Hip Hop Express also does, though, for us, is it teaches STEM skills. So students can, when the final version is done, we'll be able to make beats on the bus, right? So this is learning about technology. This is learning about other sort of math-based skills as well, in addition to sort of recording on the bus, right? Which is also technology that they end up getting to learn how to use. And so we really see this as a tool that'll come straight to the communities that need it and then work on STEM-based skills. So it's a community building skill, tool, but also a skill building tool.
Tell me a little bit, it's a bus, like you said. I think both the UIS campus and the Urbana-Champaign campus are working on this, right?
Correct. So President Killeen's office put out a call for arts and humanities grants a few years ago. The purpose of the grants were to elevate the role that arts and humanities could play in the larger community, but also to connect the campuses if we could. So really what his vision and his goal was that there would be these inter-campus teams that would come up with projects, and the projects would then have a sort of community impact. And so it's, you know, I got tuned into this project basically through folks at UIUC just reaching out and saying, hey, we have this thing and we're interested in people who might want to collaborate. And I answered the call partially because my son, who's a tap dancer, was already doing some tap outreach at St. Patrick's School. So again, we were using dance to reach children who wouldn't otherwise necessarily have access. And so the community really rallied around that project. All of the shoes for the kids had been donated. He was volunteering his time to go and do that. And so as like, you know, early, late middle schooler, early high schooler, he was really developing these leadership skills, but also introducing kids to dance. Dance is expensive. We don't tend to think about it in that way, but dance lessons are actually expensive. So if you can level the playing field, even through something like dance, something like tap, which is also very sort of rhythmic and math based, right? So like thinking about counts and things like that with tap and some of the things that he worked on with the kids. And so we already had these community connections, this connection to dance. I was already teaching a class that looked at how dance shaped American culture. So it was really a natural fit for me to get involved in this project.
And fun to be doing stuff with your son, I'm sure.
Fun to be doing stuff with my son, fun to be in the community because the tap outreach was in a building. The Hip Hop Express is outside, right? So we are outside in spaces. And so that's the part that makes that really fun. And plus the bus just looks cool. So the bus just brings people in without you having to do much advertisement. I did advertise a lot, but you don't have to because the bus is its own advertisement as well. So...
Looks good. What would you like to make happen or change in the next year?
With that project or just more broadly?
Even broadly, if it's that's great. Or if it's a broader concept, that's good too.
Yeah. I guess I would like to see less polarization more sort of compassion and understanding of varying experiences. I'm drawing on sort of my own Facebook friends and Facebook interactions. And it's very interesting at times to read and see things amongst people that I would have potentially seen as, I wouldn't say friends, but at least associates and people who knew me like really well, express things that are absolutely counter to like my very being and my experiences. It's also just interesting because it becomes clear in reading some of these things that people must certainly see myself and my son as exceptions to some of the things that are happening. Whereas my everyday being is concerned with raising him so that he doesn't end up being a statistic, right? And so I think, you know, I don't know how to get across the fact that it doesn't matter what you're doing, how much you're complying or whatever, because that always comes up, that you can still end up being a statistic. And so I think we can go really far in being more compassionate to our fellow human, to, you know, not being silent when things are blatantly problematic or hurtful or harmful. I mean, it's been really hard. And I think, you know, some of this is stemming from leadership. So it's coming from a top down. And so I've said this at UIS as well, right? Like leadership really can set the tone for what's happening at a campus or for on a wider level at a nation, in a nation or in a state. And so I think we have to take a really hard look at our leadership and the tone that they're setting and how that's impacting people. Well, it doesn't have to impact you, but if I'm telling you that this is impacting me or that it's hurting me, I think we can't dismiss those feelings amongst people. And so I'd really like to see less of that. I don't, the world is never going to be completely harmonious and, you know, Pollyanna-like. Like I don't have those sorts of visions, but I do think we can take a little bit more time to understand that this world, this nation is not working for everyone and that it never has. Like one of the things that I teach in several of my classes is the contradictions built into the very founding of the nation, right? So you're fighting for freedom. You write a Declaration of Independence while holding slaves. Like the contradiction was built into the very foundation of the nation. And so I think if you go all the way back that far, you can understand how things have not always worked evenly for all people, that the American dream has not always been able to be fulfilled by all people. And so I think if you take that to heart, then it helps you to understand why some of the things are probably still not working today. And Hamilton did that. I don't know how people love Hamilton, but can't understand. Like Hamilton brings up these ideas. Like it's one of my favorites for a number of different reasons, but it brings up these ideas. And so it's really interesting to me. People love Hamilton. They go see Hamilton. They sing the music, but the message seems to be lost on, yes, exactly. It's lost for what Lin-Manuel Miranda was trying to accomplish and what he's trying to say, not only about the founding of the nation in 1776 and prior, but also today. Like so much is still applicable today, and that seems to be missed on so many people. So,
yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. A couple more questions.
Yeah.
Is there someone in town who is sort of an unsung, I don't know if hero is the right word, but helping make things better?
I can think of several people, and these are people that I've worked with quite a bit. So Michael Phelan over at The Outlet is definitely one of those people. Erica Austin has done a ton of stuff in the community. I really think she, in many ways, carries this community on her back. She's also a Springfield native, so I think that helps. And Tiffany Mathis over at Boys and Girls Club. So these are all people that I've worked with in various capacities, and I think they're doing absolutely phenomenal things in the community. So
great. Well, there's not a lot of events going on right now because of all this, but you had the bus out, and anything coming up that we should know about?
Probably not for me. Or I shouldn't say not for me. I've been asked to do all sorts of things in the community recently, most of it through Zoom though. So I'm doing some work with the Urban League's Building Board Diversity Project. And so I'm doing a presentation in November. And so this particular project, there's been a couple of stories about it. It's specifically looking at how to make nonprofit boards more diverse, how to get more diverse people at the table and in the rooms, because so many nonprofits are doing great work for the community, but the voices of the people in the community are often not at the table. So this particular United Way initiative is looking specifically at how to do that. I'm doing some stuff with UIS Foundation folks for our 50th anniversary. So there's a talk coming up in November through UIS, the SAGE Society, that's sort of looking at, I'm speaking specifically about African Americans in Illinois and in Springfield and at UIS and things like that. And so that's coming up in November. With Tiffany Mathis and Erica Austin, every February we do a Black History Month trivia and we raise funds for a local organization. So, you know, people pay for a table and we don't keep any of it. We donate all of that money to a different organization every year. And so we've done that, I think, 4 times now. And so we'll be bringing that back in February, hopefully. We'll have to see what the restrictions kind of look like. But yeah, so there's just little things like that. And the Express will hopefully be back next spring as well, with some progress on the inside. Right now, the inside is empty. We lost time with COVID, but we're headed into the winter months where there can be some inside work done. So hopefully it'll be back next spring, or at least we plan to have it back next spring with hopefully some inside work done. So I don't know that people will still be able to go on to it just because of COVID restrictions, but we can at least offer pictures. And we did get some community input as well.